From Illinois Soul, you're listening to Dialogue. I'm Tanisha Spain. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul.
We want full justice, not partial justice. We want civil accountability, criminal culpability, and we want legislative changes. We want the laws to prevent something like this from happening again. So it is very bittersweet that on what would have been her 37th birthday, we announced this historic settlement, which is only the first step in the journey for justice for Sonya Massie.
That was civil rights attorney Ben Crump announcing the $10 million settlement between Sangamon County and the family of Sonya Massie. Ex-Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson faces a first-degree murder charge in the shooting after responding to a call from Massie about a suspected prowler. He shot her while she was moving a pot of water from her stove. Brian Mackey of The 21st Show and State House reporter Mawa Iqbal break down what this settlement means for the family's pursuit of justice.
As we said, there's been a settlement that's been reached. What did the parties agree on? What are the terms of this?
Yeah, so it's a $10 million settlement, which will go to Sonya's two teenage children. We got a memo from the county board that the negotiations took place up in Chicago for the last week. They were very intensive. The lawyers from the county met with the lawyers of the family. And in a press conference that the family's lawyers had yesterday, they were saying that they're very satisfied with the dollar amount that they reached because of how great it is, right? And so for context, you know, they were talking about how in other cases where an unarmed Black person is shot by a law enforcement officer, like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, their families got settlements that were pretty close to what Sonya Massie's family got. So in Breonna Taylor's case, they got a settlement of $12 million. In George Floyd's case, they got a settlement of $26 million. And so for Sangamon County, which of course isn't as big as Louisville or Minneapolis, $10 million is quite a chunk of change. That they were saying that the budget for the sheriff's department this upcoming fiscal year is projected to be $22 million. So if you think about $10 million is almost half of the sheriff's department budget. But of course, you know, with any horrific tragedy like this, obviously there's no dollar amount that can put the family at ease, right? We did hear from James Wilburn, who's Sonya's father, who was saying that, you know, it's a tragic day. My heart is heavy, and no amount of money can bring her back.
You mentioned James Wilburn, Sonya Massie's father. We have some audio that you sent us. This is him talking about his thoughts on, it's about police officers, law enforcement officers that travel from station to station.
I called at my daughter's celebration of life that there should be some changes in how things are prosecuted when they take place like this in the state. And I said that the state of Illinois could be leaders throughout our whole country for seeing that these frequent flyers who go from one department to another, who are given the opportunity to resign rather than be fired because it's an easier process, and they go from one department to another, as this rogue cop did.
So he's talking about some of the policy prescriptions that people have been pursuing since this episode last year. What else have people been talking about changing in Illinois?
Yeah, so, you know, what James is referring to was the fact that Sean Grayson had a disciplinary record, right? So he had bounced around from several different departments around central Illinois. He and, you know, with reporting, investigative reporting from Illinois Public Media, we were able to learn that he had problems just in nearly every police department, sheriff's department he was at prior to coming to Sangamon County, in addition to having two DUI arrests on his record. And so since that information came to light, you have this huge groundswell of community activists, members, Massie's family, and elected officials talking about ways to change how we hire police officers in Illinois. And so at the press conference yesterday, they had Representative Justin Slaughter, who's a Democrat from Chicago, and he's working with State Senator Doris Turner, who's actually from Springfield and actually knows the Massey family. She said that, you know, she knew Sonia, she knows her mother very well. And so for them, they're kind of teaming up now, right? To you know, the lawmakers are back in their spring session. It's going to adjourn end of May. So they have basically till the end of May to pass these reform bills that would essentially make it the hiring process, the background checking process for potential police hirees more stringent, more strict. And so that's one policy area they've talked about. I know that community members have also been pushing for more robust responses to mental health calls, because according to county records, you know, it's documented that Sonia was in need of mental health treatment and seeking mental health help up until the day she was killed, right? And so it's really called into question this, you know, system that we have set up in Sangamon County, but also kind of in a lot of places throughout Illinois, of, you know, when someone calls 911, they're under mental stress and duress. Do we deploy officers with their guns and their scary, you know, weapons, or do we deploy mental health professionals? And so that's something that, you know, lawmakers, elected officials are looking at as well.
You mentioned earlier, speaking of the some of the policy implications here, that this is almost half. What, $10 million is like nearly half of the $22 million Sheriff's Department budget. Have county officials talked about how they're going to be paying for this, where the money's going to come from?
Yeah, so they had a county board meeting on Tuesday night where they officially approved the settlement, and they had county administrator come and explain that the money is actually coming from several reserve funds that they have for one-time emergency payments such as these. They're not going to, you know, raise taxes or cut funding from other departments. It's all just coming from a sort of, quote, rainy day fund. It is important to note, too, that, you know, according to the Massey family's lawyers, they're saying that this $10 million amount is perhaps one of the biggest, largest single payout that the county has ever made in a civil rights case like this.
Last thing I want to ask is about the former, now former, then current Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, who has been charged with murder in Sonia Massey's killing. Where do things stand with his case?
Right. So there's a criminal trial going on for his, like you said, he's facing murder charges. He is currently in jail custody, and that is going under the petition process at the moment. So his lawyers have tried to get him released pre-trial, basically arguing that he is no longer a danger to the community because the crime in which he's been charged for was committed while he was an officer. Now that he's been stripped of that title, he is no longer a danger and can't commit that crime, is their argument. And so the appeals court did allow for the pre-trial release for Sean Grayson, but now the state's attorneys office, which is representing the people, that the state, you know, against Sean Grayson, they have appealed that decision up to the Illinois Supreme Court. And last I saw, the Supreme Court did agree to hear this case. We don't know when exactly, but we do know that the next court date for Sean Grayson is in March.
So no trial date set yet for when he's actually going to go before a jury or a judge. Okay. Mao Iqbal, Statehouse reporter for Illinois Public Radio Stations. Thank you for being with us.
There's more fallout from President Donald Trump's war on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. You may remember the president signed an executive order looking to end DEI practices not only in government but inside U.S. corporations. Despite all of that, the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is optimistic about the department's future. Sean Garrick is the vice chancellor for DEI, and he says even if those programs are reworked, that won't change the school's values.
Maybe it's not the vice chancellor, it's, you know, a director of something. I think all that sort of stuff is speculation, but again, I'm not worried about it. This university is firmly committed to serving all of Illinois.
Meanwhile, a program that helps Black students transition to the University of Illinois has been put on hold. As IPM Student Newsroom's Stephanie Oriana reports, it's led to questions about the funding situation at the U of I's African American Cultural Center in Urbana.
At a meeting with students Monday night, campus officials explained that rising costs have led to reduced hours at the Cultural Center, and the early arrival program for new students, known as Circuit, is on pause because the grant that funded it ran out. U of I junior Taylor Ariana McKinney went through the program, and she says she worries about students who will miss out.
My primary concern is that this foundation that was laid out for me is not going to be laid out for the previous students that are coming in. I can honestly say that without Circuit, I would not be where I am today.
Campus officials say they're trying to find additional funding and that they expect to bring the Circuit program back soon. I'm Stephanie Oriana, IPM News.
During Urbana's February 25th primary election, voters will decide who they want to be their next mayor. Mayor Diane Marlin is not running for a third term. The primary is between two Democrats. Annie Adams has been involved with city planning and is a member of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission. Deshaun Williams is Champaign County's chief deputy treasurer. With no Republicans in the race, the winner will become the city's next chief executive. IPM's Arjun Thakur spoke with the candidates about why they're running and their vision for Urbana. He started with Deshaun Williams.
I think that there's a window of opportunity for, you know, for growth, you know, as far as just economic development standpoint. We've seen a significant, you know, decrease in businesses and whatnot over the last couple of years, you know, on Philo Road in particular. I know that the business district, you know, downtown, you know, Urbana, they are yearning, you know, for a boost. You know, and I think that, you know, my history and my, you know, previous work, you know, history and career, you know, throughout within the banking world, I know what it takes to not only help get a business up and running, but to ensure that they grow and sustain, you know, throughout their journey. Those are two really strong, you know, issues that we have, you know, ahead of us. And I feel as though I'm the right person, you know, to tackle those, you know, day one. And there's also, you know, been some issues just in regards to people's, you know, thoughts around public safety. I've made a conscious effort to build a relationship with our new police chief. And we've had, you know, some very in-depth conversations, right? And understanding that we all want the same thing. We may just differ on how we get there, you know, but I think that he and I walking side by side into some of our most vulnerable communities is going to be one of the winning solutions, you know, to the things that we do moving forward.
I think one of the biggest challenges we're facing right now was in 1970, we were 6 square miles and we had 33,000 residents. Today, we are 12 square miles and we are 38,000 or 34,000 residents. So we right now have doubled our infrastructure. In addition to that, 31% of our properties are off the tax rolls due to their status. So we're unable to collect property taxes from them. So what we need to do is grow the city of Urbana. You get federal dollars based on resident status. So the number of residents that we have coming in affects your federal dollars as well. So what I would like to do is find ways that we could grow our city. We have empty lots in our downtown district. We have empty lots actually right outside the studio here that I would like that we could build. I would love if we could do maybe a tech hub, start attracting different tech startups, get a tech startup going there. Other things I would like to do is build additional housing in a lot of the empty lots and empty spaces that we have available in our city.
Let's talk about housing. I'm reading directly from Imagine Urbana, which is, you know, the draft comprehensive plan for the city. It states that the city, quote, needs more housing of all types and at all price points. What would you do to expand housing options in the city?
What this plan is doing is it's trying to say, where do we want to be in the next 20 years? Not where do we want to be tomorrow, not where do we want to be in 2 weeks, but 20 years from now, do we want to have more than 38 or 34,000 residents? Do we want to have more dense housing? Do we want to have single family housing? What kind of mix do we want? And that's what I'm very interested in. I'm deeply interested in getting our downtown activated and vibrant. So we have spaces. We just need to get developers into our city. We need to have them build confidence that they can get the kind of developments they want done. Right in our downtown, right next to, there's like this little dry cleaner. We have that empty lot that the city owns, that lot. We also have other lots down by Boneyard Creek that we have purchased that we can also build on. So there's quite a bit of opportunity for us to build that kind of housing. And I do know people want single family housing. I understand the need for that. And I understand that we need to definitely work with people on how to make sure that we can have single family housing as well as other types of housing.
Housing has definitely been a strong subject, right? You know, affordable housing is the thing that, you know, everyone loves to mention, you know, around that. You know, and I've said, you know, continuously, we need to get to a space where we're understanding what affordable housing even means, you know, in the city of Urbana. It's a broad scale, right? And I've said this time and time again, it's not a one size fits all. So, you know, understanding that I, you know, want to, you know, put a lot of emphasis on understanding that 2/3 of the housing in the city is rental, right? So I want to get to a space where we are also understanding, for as far as affordable housing and things of that nature is concerned, we need to focus in, as well as rentals, we need to focus in on home ownership, right? And ensuring that that's affordable, you know, for folks as well. You know, in regards to the development of new housing, I am absolutely for it, as long as we are ensuring that it's being done in the proper zoned spaces, right? That you know, we have a lot of open and vacant lots that, you know, that we can build on, right? For me, I would want to ensure that we are not compromising the integrity of our historical neighborhoods and things of that nature, right? And in the process of all of this, as we are developing and growing housing and things of that nature, we need to make sure that we are involving the community members. That is going to be my top priority, is ensuring that we are involving community members, because again, at the end of the day, they are the experts of these neighborhoods.
If you were in, you know, New York or Los Angeles or any other, you know, coastal city, distant community, and someone asked you what Urbana has to offer, what would you tell them?
I would tell them Urbana has diversity. Urbana has a genuine love. Urbana has an opportunity to grow, prosper, succeed. Folks within this community, they want to see their city at its very best. A global, you know, kind of array of folks, you know, and for me, that has been one of the biggest successes, you know, of this campaign, is seeing folks and their love for this city. It's going to be extremely important that we continue to express that, you know, and that we, as far as my administration is concerned, when I take office, we will be an administration for the city, right? We are absolutely going to ensure that we involve everyone in our community, right? No matter your background, no matter your upbringing, you will have a voice in our community, in our city, in our government. It's one of the honestly, one of the greatest cities in this country. And I am honored to be here and raising my family here.
I love Urbana because I have lived in larger cities. I've been in larger cities. What does Urbana have? It is a safe, affordable, and connected city. And I would like to make sure we keep it that way. My husband and I were able to move here. We were able to start saving more for our retirement. We were able to buy good food, locally grown food. I can go to a farmer's market on Saturday mornings and buy locally grown food. I can buy cheese made a couple miles from my house in Urbana. It's absolutely incredible. The food here is great. The people here are great. They're friendly. They're interested. They want to see these cities thrive, and they want to see you thrive. That's just what I tell people. Also, I can ride a bike. I'm just a person who likes to bike and walk everywhere. I just did not know that a city existed like this, that I could ride my bike. I can walk everywhere. We are a gold level city. We are the only one in the state of Illinois. And I believe there's like 38 or 35 in the nation. So that is also something to be very proud of. The bus system here, top notch. If you've lived in Chicago, which I have, you kind of get a little, you're kind of like, I'd rather walk than take the bus, because you never know when the bus is coming. You're unsure if you'll even get to your destination. Here, you can just look on an app, and it will actually tell you when the bus is coming, and the bus will come, and it's affordable. You can afford to take the bus. So these are things that I'm very interested in.
That was Urbana's mayoral candidates, Annie Adams and Deshaun Williams, speaking with IPM's Arjun Takur. Urbana's primary election is February 25th. And that's all for this week's dialogue. This episode was produced by Kennedy Vincent, Ariel Ravini, and Reginald Hardwick, with contributions from Arjun Takur, Emily Hayes, Mawa Iqbal, and Stephanie Orellana. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, which is a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Tanisha Spain. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll dialogue with you again next week.